Making Progress Requires Involvement, an address presented to the Springfield Association of the Blind, November 5, 2018, by Gary Wunder. I'm here today because I think blind people working with blind people is both fantastic and underappreciated. It is vitally necessary. I find it amazing that a group of people who has been seen as helpless and has often seen themselves in this same way has actually gathered to do more than whine and cry and throw a pity party. Who would have blamed them? How many would have helped in this grief session, believing that this was a normal reaction from those so disadvantaged? Luckily, blind people have gotten together to do more than complain. While we love God and respect His word, we have seen as allegory the statement that when the blind lead the blind, they all fall into the ditch. Instead, we have found that unless the blind lead the blind, there is often little leadership from people who know what we need, what we want, and what we aspire to become. Blind people want to be talked with, not lectured to, and although no one has full control of his life or her destiny, all of us want to have a major say in what happens to us and what we will become. So how did blind people come together, and what in the world made us think we could be productive? Well, there was this blind man with a gigantic intellect who gave us an efficient way to read and write. His name was Louis Braille, and although many educators, including those from his own country, tried to suppress this code in favor of something that looked more like print, students loved it and continued its use after his untimely death at age 43. Schools for the blind were started in the 1800s. You may be surprised at the reason. The question being explored in creating these schools was whether sight was a necessary ingredient to learning. Could the blind really learn? Mostly these schools were started as research projects with no clear objective other than learning for the education community. Having a school for the blind also had more to do with showing how progressive a nation or a state was than it did with lifting the blind out of poverty. Critics of educating the blind, many within the field, said that their jobs were made difficult by those blind students who returned to the school to ask for help in getting jobs, an endeavor many of the school administrators thought preposterous and certainly beyond their responsibility. Some of the students actually thought they would be well suited to work with other blind people, and this idea, too, was considered ridiculous by the educators of the day. Some complained that education created unrealistic expectations in the blind population. Some of their blind students became uppity, thinking they could transcend their disability and make their own way in the world. But schools for the blind brought blind people together, and those people began to talk. Whenever one of them would accomplish something worthwhile, like learning a craft and making something people would buy, a window of possibility was opened just a little, and the fresh air and light that came through was enough to encourage people to dream and then to try to make their dreams come true. A man named Newell Perry got his PhD in mathematics early in the last century, but nowhere could he find employment except at the California School for the Blind. This turned out to be fortunate because his example opened doors for others, one of them becoming a professor of speech and political science named Jacobus Tenbrook. It was he who started the National Federation of the Blind. When we started our organization in 1940, opportunity for the blind was a dream that depended on good luck and on the state in which you lived. Some states were progressive. California was offering blind students assistance to train in technical fields. The federal government initiated the Social Security Program, an effort at rehabilitation through which some blind might become employed, and also started a vending program in which blind people could have vending stands on federal property. But as the federal government became more involved, some of its rules conflicted with more progressive states, and blind people were told that we needed to make a decision between getting state aid or getting training to work. So getting public support would preclude training that might help one remove him or herself from public assistance. No state organization alone could combat this, so a national organization was formed. One of the first things we did was to work to see that people in every state got some form of income so they could venture out and experience independence. We wanted to be more than a burden to our parents, brothers, and sisters, and though for many of us having a job and family seemed well beyond our reach, we dreamed and we heard about blind people who had achieved such things. Jacobus Tenbrook was being one of them. When he and other federations like him came to where we lived and said we could do the same things they had done, again, we had hope. After getting some guaranteed income, we worked together for jobs. Public employment seemed the right place to start, so we applied for jobs with the Federal Civil Service. And what was their reaction to our applications? They said no. We are not agencies of charity, they said. We must do the people's work, and that work doesn't involve hiring the handicapped. But we applied to take those civil service tests anyway, and again they said no. Why give a test to a person who couldn't read it? Put the test in Braille, we said. Too expensive, they proclaimed. Let us use a reader. Impractical, was their response. So the NFP organized the legal fund and took the federal government to court. We won the right to take civil service exams, but before we could celebrate, we learned that the Civil Service Board would let us take the test, but would not post our scores. Back to court we went, and again it agreed with us and said that the government must post our scores. This was another elusive victory. We will post your scores, said the government, but we will tell those who hire you that you are blind and that they should not consider you for a job. The federal government is not a charity, and with the purpose of hiring those who are obviously incapable of doing the country's business. Again, we found ourselves in court. We won, and the federal government is now a place that hires qualified blind people. Work has always been a priority for us. Most people want a reason to get up in the morning, and when we go to bed at night, we want to do so with tiredness that springs from accomplishments, not boredom. Besides that, many of us want the money that comes from work and respect that comes when answering the question, what do you do for a living? Work is our way out of poverty, and I don't know anyone who willingly lives in the conditions that poverty imposes. Getting a job isn't usually easy if you are blind. First, you have to convince people that you are capable and that you know how to work around the problems blindness may cause in your job, and lastly, that you will be a person worth paying. Then we have to deal with technology. Lots of technology enhances our lives, but some shuts us down and makes our daily walk more difficult than it needs to be. So what is the NFB doing about accessibility? We're talking with big companies and offering to help them make their software and hardware accessible. Sometimes companies are surprised that a blind person would ever want to use their offerings. They are usually happy to have our assistance, but sometimes they say we are such a small population that they don't care whether their services are usable for us. In some of these cases, we sue these companies because it is the only way to get their attention. We don't like to sue businesses or units of government. First, it is expensive. Second, it is adversarial and unpleasant. Third, there is never any guarantee we will win. Just like winning creates good case law, losing creates bad case law. But when we see no other choice, we ask the courts for help. And what is remarkable is that while we start off as adversaries with companies, schools, and agencies in the government, we often end up as friends because they see that we want to bring them business, competent employees, and positive press. As one university said, we hated to see you swoop in here like you knew something about our obligation under the law and about our business. But what really surprised us was when you left, we found ourselves saying goodbye to friends, friends with the commitment on both sides that we would continue to work together. This was a win-win for everybody. This is the kind of organization I want to support and be a part of. It's the kind of organization I will shortly invite you to join. The largest contributor to blindness besides aging is disability, diabetes. We know that the information blind people have will often determine whether we remain at home or feel the need to go into a nursing facility to live. Blind people can test our blood sugar, and we can give ourselves medication, including shots, but this is only true if we make these facts known and show each other how it is done. A couple of decades ago, we created a magazine called The Voice of the Diabetic. We established an office and hired a staff. The office was headed by Ed Bryant. I bet some of you know that name. Well, Ed is no longer with us on Earth, but his idea continues. We routinely run articles on the Braille Monitor from people with diabetes explaining how they remain independent with the disease. We take articles from leading diabetes and magazines and make them available in Braille and in audio so all of us know the current state of thinking in the medical field about how to remain healthy and slow the progression of the disease. What are our challenges today? Ask most blind people and many of us will say that transportation is our most significant obstacle. The world is now working to build cars that drive themselves. The auto industry is excited about it. The insurance companies are excited as well. We who are blind are also excited, but we have work to do. We must see that these self-driving cars are created in such a way that they are usable without vision. Imagine a car that can drive itself but has a touchscreen that you can't use. We are working to see that when self-driving cars become a reality, that they will also be accessible to the blind, and we are working actively with all big players to see that this happens, including the Congress and state legislators. Right now, we have a really big challenge. To be independent requires that we be able to do our own laundry, cook our own meals, wash our dishes. Go to any big box store you want, and you will find a number of machines that we cannot modify or label. There's no law saying home appliances have to be accessible. There should be, but right now Congress is not receptive. They say regulation is not business friendly. President Trump has said that for every new regulation the federal government adopts, three must be repealed. While I respect the attempt to guard against excessive regulation, I'm not content to go to a nursing home because I can't buy usable home appliances. We need lots of stories from blind people who live independently and who count on their appliances being accessible. Again, I'm going to ask for your help. So much of what we do is to help blind children because these young people are our future reflections. We want those who come after us to have it at least as good as we have had it. And we want them to have better if we can. Creating opportunity starts with education. Part of what we miss in education is learning about pictures and icons and graphs. So many of our jobs today in the sciences require knowing about these things, and our hope is that by introducing young children to these, they will become as natural as Braille and other things that involve the development of the sense of touch. This means working on technology to make pictures touchable and making them easy and cheap enough to create, that people do so in abundance. We also want blind kids to create pictures they can feel. And again, we are putting money into exciting technology to do this. All of you know that literacy is important. Our blind children are too often going through school without it. Audiobooks are wonderful, but who learns to spell by listening to audio? Who observes punctuation through audio? People who believe audio is sufficient just haven't thought this through. Do I use audio? Yes. Do I love audio? Of course I do. But it isn't what taught me to write or to read aloud. It isn't what helped me follow outlines or write computer code. But our blind children face another obstacle. People want those of us who can see a bit to learn print. They want us this so much that they force us to learn to read print even when it hurts our eyes, gives us headaches, ruins our posture, and keeps us from coming to love reading as a path to personal note-taking, pleasure, education, and employment. We have won the right to put our children in schools where they live, but we haven't yet ensured that they will be getting an education. Both are important, and keeping blind people in their home schools and giving them a great education takes lots of work. It is work that needs all of us to do, and the upcoming generation is counting on us. When I was a blind kid, I didn't know successful blind adults. This scared me because I knew I was blind, and I knew my family would only respect me if I found employment. I wanted to have a family. I wanted to influence people in the same way my dad and my uncles influenced them. I didn't yearn to be the president of the United States or a man of wealth, but I wanted to matter to somebody and not be the burden that some unlucky person in my family had to support. Getting to know successful blind people helped me find the path, and working with those people helped me to follow it. When I ran into obstacles, they helped me find answers. When I found answers, they appreciated my sharing them. When I have felt down and overwhelmed, they have given me strength. And when I felt on top, and some of them didn't, I gave back when they so freely gave me. I am asking that you get involved, not just in appreciating what we do for blind people, but to be a real part of what helps the blind. What we do takes volunteers. What we do takes creative thinkers and doers. What we do takes numbers of people willing to speak out with us. What we do takes money, and that means we need people who are willing to help us raise funds. Fundraising isn't glamorous, but without funds, blind people simply won't have the tools to do what I've outlined today. Just this trip will cost $300 for transportation alone, never mind the food and the other expenses that go along with travel. The National Federation of the Blind is not a big luxury liner or a cruise ship. No, we are a canoe, relying on everyone to take up an oar and move blind people where we want to go. If we want quality lives, we have the primary responsibility to work for them. If we want change, we must be that change. We must give with all our minds, our hearts, and our energy. Dreams are only dreams until we dare to act on them. I invite you to help me make those dreams become real. It's risky because we don't always win. It's hard because sometimes people say no when we ask them to say yes. It's hard because some people think there is virtue in not being involved. They say to me, "What you do is okay, but I'm not a causist." Well, I'm not a causist, and I have other things to do in my life as well, but change doesn't happen without involvement and commitment. And I care enough about blind people that I'm willing to put time into changing a small part of the world for us. Think about this. There's a special blessing in giving. Too often we blind people are seen only as takers, people so disadvantaged that we have nothing to give. But the truth is that we have much to give and good reason to take control, not only of our lives, but to change for the better the lives of blind people today and tomorrow. Almost 50 years ago, a president observed in his inaugural address that until he has found a cause larger than himself, no man is truly whole. Our religious beliefs embrace the same sentiment through the Golden Rule and the declaration that what we do for our fellow man, we do for God. It doesn't get much better. Please consider becoming a part of us, moving from the bleachers to the playing field. Your involvement will make a difference to you and to other blind people who need your help and encouragement. With your help, blind people will climb the stairs of opportunity, get jobs, have families, and be contributors. Without it, we will struggle along as best as we can, failing to reach and help so many who yearn to live the lives they want. I want to leave you with some thoughts that are crucial in my participation and may be helpful in kindling yours. I am filled with hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind because my expectations are raised. My contributions make a difference to me and to others, and I can celebrate the realization of my dreams with my Federation family. Every day we raise the expectations of blind people because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back. Thank you, and may God bless you and those you love.